can transport people through time and space for a really sexy, dirty, fantastic, gritty time.
The first time I ever met Dirty, I thought she was some big deal burlesque performance star from, I didn't know, Philadelphia? Because why didn't I know this woman? She's amazing.
Dirty Martini is the Gypsy Rose Lee of our generation.
It's campy and it's satirical and it's ironic, but it's nothing if it's not backed up with a tremendous amount of talent, and Dirty backs up with talent, and that's what makes it fabulous.
There's something about how she moves, how she just like really takes the stage and throws it around the room.
She doesn't even need a spotlight. She's got that inner light in her, and it comes out of her. And that to me is like, oh!
She's unbelievable. I think she's from another planet, actually.
She's such a force of nature.
Dirty is on fire.
She really does embody the original concept of burlesque.
Ladies and gentlemen, and the rest of you know who you are, please put your hands together for the legendary, the world famous Miss 44 with a whole lot more, Dirty Martini!
How are you? You look fabulous.
Well, thank you very much.
You and your silent movie eyes.
Just here in my boudoir and my Catherine Delish little robe, making myself comfortable for the weekend.
Oh, I want to see. Stand up. I want to see.
Okay, you want to see my sweatpants?
Yes. Oh, I want to see everything. Oh, there we go. Oh, I love it. Is that a peignoir set? No, it's...
It's a peignoir. It's a Catherine Delish original.
Oh. I don't
she's
think
so
I know
amazing.
This.
Once in a while, she'll send me something fabulous, and I get to wear it. I'm like, oh, how did I get to
wear it? Oh, my God. The only reason I know what a peignoir set is because my favorite, one of the two of my favorite characters on television was Agnes Moorehead in Bewitched.
Yes.
And they always had her in a caftan, like pushed up in the corner. she was always
wearing the best colors too.
Oh my
with
god.
That eyeliner.
Right.
Blue shadow. Oh god, that amazing blue shadow.
Yeah. Always. And I didn't realize at the time that she was like this major movie star, and then decided to do television when television wasn't like it is now, and kicked the hell out of that role. She is my favorite. Her and Jeannie, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's so fun to watch some of those old shows from pre that era, like just past the height of the Hollywood MGM musicals,
right.
Because like all of those people who were on either doing burlesque or were on Broadway or were on, you know, the studio roster, mm-hmm. were like doing these TV shows, like Charlie's Angels I saw once. I was just watching. I was like, whatever, I'll watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fucking, not Rita Hayworth, but Barbara Stanwyck. Barbara Stanwyck played
what?
The female Charlie and had male angels. I mean, so not only were these Hollywood beauties used to their best potential, like they actually, you know, Hollywood understood their importance and like how I know there was some gay person, you know, booking that casting agent going, you know, who would be great? It'd be so funny if we got Barbara Stanwyck, the gum popping burlesque dancer from the 40s.
Holy shit. Well, you know, she, one of my, also one of my favorite shows growing up was The Big Valley. Do you remember that show?
Mm-hmm.
The Big Valley, and Barbara Stanwyck played the matriarch in this ranch. And one of her sons was Little Joe, the character's name was Little Joe, who was, the guy that did Little House on the Prairie. Of course, I'm going to forget his last name. Michael Landon was one of her sons. And the other one that I had the biggest crush on, I don't know his name. He was like tall and dark. And then
tall, dark, and handsome. I'll take it.
And then Lee Majors was the middle son from Bionic Man.
Yeah, I remember. And I was just talking about Bionic Man today because my dad had a hip replacement. And so I can't, he had like two knees replaced and a hip replacement. So I call him the Bionic Man.
Pretty much. That's awesome. Good for him.
He's doing good though. Like he's in his late 80s now, maybe turned 90 already.
Holy shit.
His time goes fast.
I know it does. So you were fully vaccinated. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah, I still even have my
I see your patch.
Hold on, you can see there. My little Band-Aid is right there.
Yep. So let me ask you real quick, because I don't want to talk all about COVID, but we had our first shot. It was 2 weeks ago, and then we get our second shot this coming Thursday. And the first shot for me, they did it right, like way up here in my muscle.
Yeah, right
hurt
here.
Like a motherfucker. It hurt so, like, for seconds.
I think that the guy might have pierced the joint with the needle when he put the needle in, because I couldn't even raise my arm like that.
Ooh.
For 3 days. It hurt so bad. But this woman, the number two shot,
yeah,
she was kick-ass. She was not playing. You know what the trick is to take the muscle like that and get the muscle, like grab it,
right,
and then jab it in. And like, I was like, I didn't even feel the needle. And then this is fine. I mean, it hurts a little, but no big deal.
And that was 3 days ago?
That was yesterday.
Oh, yesterday. Okay, good. Well,
so I'm feeling a little bit under the weather today, but nothing, you know, nothing major, nothing terrible.
Nothing that you couldn't do a puppet show photo shoot. Tell me about that.
Puppet show and a podcast.
And a broadcast. Oh, my God.
And I did a doctor's appointment, too. So I'm like, all of the world is coming back.
The queen of all of our hearts, please welcome to the stage the absolutely inimitable Dirty Martini.
No, isn't that exciting? That's so great.
Yeah, I happen to be a puppeteer, you know, not marionette so much, but when I first came to New York, I worked with a company called Pink Ink, and we did like full body puppets. And we I just sort of fell into puppeteering coming from dance school, because dancing, you know, you have such awareness of your body anyway. And then I just loved having relationships with characters or becoming a character, even if it was an abstract movement thing. Like I really enjoyed the puppetry of it. So I got a chance to work with Viva DiConcini, who's a rock star, and she's making a kind of new fairy tale about the Old West that is about women who wanted to leave the towns and live with the Native American people, because they treated women so much better in some of the tribes that were there. So a lot of the women kind of left the town and were like, you know, awesome. I'm going to go live with these people because they have it figured out.
Right.
You know, so there was some of that history, and there's a lot of it muddled because the white men of the time sort of switched it around to make it seem like the women were captured or the women were held against their will. You know how they do.
Right. Like they still do. Like they still do. I was going to say that sounds so correct.
They flip the narrative just like they flip the narrative with the Native Americans with scalping. You know, it's like white people were scalping people, not Native Americans. It wasn't a part of their culture, you know, until we came along and told them that, you know, it was a really good way to show that you've killed someone without having to carry a head around.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did that Norwegian. So they're, what do you call them? You know, this is dirty history. I don't need to know the name of those Norwegians.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I don't care. It sounds great. Oh, so she's a rock star doing a music video, was that it?
Yeah, so she's making a puppet town full of really awesome puppets. So I got to puppeteer the madam puppet of the town.
You're texting me the picture and I'm like, what is going on here? Tell me, it sounds so fun.
Yeah, so I got to work with Kate Bram, who I worked with in Julie Atlas Muses Panto a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Down at Abrams Art Center, and I got to work with another puppeteer, Juanita Cardenas, who's like a machine dazzle, who I just love. They all work with Taylor Mack, if you know him and his work.
Yeah.
So they're kind of, they're the people who give Taylor Mack his like cachet, I think, you know, like they really have, he works with really wonderful people like Viva and Machine. And so, yeah, I was puppeteering with all these wonderful people.
That I can't wait to see that. Does she have any idea when it's coming out or?
It's going to be, I think they're doing it like a web series. So I'll link to it when it's all finished.
Oh, okay, cool. All right.
And Annie Perry is directing. She's amazing.
I should know who these people are. I'm so embarrassed.
Well, if you know, you know.
If you know, you know. Speaking of who you know. I want to talk to you about Barshline Follies and when are they coming back? Because I get, like, I follow her on Instagram and I know, and I think she's hinting at, you know, it's not going to be that much longer. Like, we're going to come back. And do you know anything about it?
Well, you know, Suzanne is always like, what's next? You know, she was so sweet when everything shut down that one Sunday in March.
Yep.
She called us all up from Barshland Follies and she's like, I'll pay you to come to my house and film something and we'll just release it over the COVID. Because that's when we thought COVID was going to be like 6 months. You know, we're like, we live in the digital age. This is going to be easy. Right. You know, China already dealt with it. Europe already dealt with it. We can certainly learn from them. And then we had the fucking Trump train wreck, you know, and his awful, awful people that, you know, are denying that you should wear a mask and all of that.
Right. And altering
we're just lucky that we live in New York and that it got handled pretty quickly. So we didn't have that many deaths in the second round.
Right. Right. Imagine if we lived in like one of those, like Wisconsin or one of those North Dakota states or something where they just have the worst leadership. It's just awful.
Well, my good friend, world famous Bob, is living in Austin, Texas, which is really a great place to live, very liberal. But because it's in Texas with that awful governor and she hasn't left the house in, good Lord, probably a whole entire year.
She was on my list of things I wanted to ask you about because I follow her also on Instagram. And she went through a rough patch there, you know, health wise. And I think she seems like she's doing better and feeling stronger, and every time I see her and I pretend that I know her because I feel like I know her through you and just root her on and cheer her on, and so she looks great.
She's doing so great. I mean, it's just hard. It's been hard for all of us to keep our spirits up, and she's in a new town trying to be a New Yorker, you know, rallying everybody, and it's just hard to get people on your timeline. And, you know, New Yorkers were like,
New Yorkers like this. And I would imagine, I've never been to Austin, but it's like, I imagine it's sort of like, you know, a little bit slower way of looking at things, slower pace of looking at things and looking at life. I hope she's doing.
But anyway, hopefully Suzanne and the McKittrick will survive. I mean, certainly Suzanne's she's like a glamorous rhinestone cockroach. She'll always come back.
That is such a great way to explain it. And I think she would actually agree with you with that description because, oh, I just love, you know, let me just back up for the audience here because I forget that there's other people that are going to watch this. We had our interview, you and I, you came to my house. We had this great interview that I re-listened to today just to make sure that I didn't want to talk about the same kind of stuff. And we made you dinner and then we hung out for hours. It was great. And then I believe it was a week after that, we went to see Barchline Follies for the first time. And let me tell you, that is like without exaggeration, one of my most favorite nights I've ever spent in my life. And I'm just turned 55 and just everything, I've never seen anything like it. It was fabulous, like just the best. So I'm really.
The thing about Suzanne that's so great, and I was just talking about this the other day, is that she doesn't necessarily know everything that goes on with all the performers. She really like she picks people like putting a salad together,
right,
you know,
right.
Kind of a rough tossed salad.
Right.
And but the thing that she does know is the audience, and she watches. Mm. She doesn't watch the show. She watches the audience watch the show, and so that is the kind of brilliance of Suzanne because she really has that feeling of what people are reacting to.
Right, right.
So she knows what to put in the salad.
Exactly. What a great way to explain it. I mean, I imagine all those years of doing parties and party promoting and stuff, but I also do think it's, you know, you can't necessarily learn that kind of thing. I think it's just something that's, you know, innate in someone, and she has that instinct, obviously. Yeah, that was just, I mean, every single number in between numbers, the whole gestalt of the place, it's just beautiful. And
it's magical.
It really is magical, you know, and I didn't know what to expect. I didn't want to do any research. I wanted to go in there completely, you know, blind in a way. And every second of that experience waiting to get in was even cool. It was,
you know, freezing. How Disney does it. They like make sure that the line is more fun than the ride.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, but you know, that's for the people who don't know the McKittrick, it's the place where Sleep No More happens.
Right.
That masked immersive extravaganza that's been going on for decades now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like. And,
which I've never seen. Have you seen it?
One of the cabaret floors in that space.
Oh, nice.
And there's a rooftop bar too there that was just lovely.
Right, right.
Wonderful place to hang out after or before.
Yeah, we did a bit of that as well. And they had these, it was really cold that night, remember?
Mm-hmm.
It was in March, like March 8th or something. And they had these giant fires, like, I mean, you know, self-contained fires and stuff. And so just everything about that night, just everything about it, it was fantastic. And then seeing you on stage for the first time since like 1996, which is when I first saw you. And you don't remember, but that's okay.
Was it at the Lore? Is that why I don't remember?
No.
I would have covered with a gimp mask.
I would definitely have remembered that. No, it was, I don't even know where it was. Anyway, yeah, so I hope that comes back soon. So I also wanted to ask you about, I think it was like a month after we spoke the first time, you were going on tour with Dita Von Teese. Mm-hmm. What was that whole thing like? Because I think when you started the tour, we had rumblings of, you know, something is happening and it might be really bad. What was that like? Because you were there. You were in Europe when this whole shit.
Actually, no. I was... I had just gotten back from Europe in February. I was like, Dita Von Teese did a tour of Australia and New Zealand. in December, November. So we came back. We did a New Year's thing in LA, and we did this crazy, it's called The Friendship. It used to be called Holy Ship, but it's like a giant cruise ship, a Royal Caribbean cruise ship filled with ravers.
Oh my God.
And we, the whole cast of what was called Strip Strip Hooray, I don't know, she changes the name.
But it's
our review, our burlesque review with Dita Von Teese was in the main theater with the best stage hands I've ever worked with in my life. Those people are like Vegas times 1,000 because they work together on a ship. So they know each other so well.
Right.
And so they were so nice to us. And that was our New Year's. That was like a cruise to the Bahamas. Can you imagine a cruise?
Oh my. Oh.
That's when, like, right after that, the cruise ships were like stranded for a month and people couldn't go out of their staterooms. Like, oh.
They were trapped. Like, some of them were trapped, right? They had to be, like, they couldn't leave the ship for like weeks or something.
Yeah,
right?
Because stupid Trump was like, I'm not going to get more COVID numbers on my watch. So he didn't let people, even from this country, come back to our country. It's like, it was so gross how they handled it. But
awful.
All that aside, I was supposed to go to Europe for in February for the Prague Burlesque Festival.
Oh, okay.
And it was like a thing that it just happened, like somebody couldn't go. And so I was like, sure, I'll do it. And it would have meant that I'd have to go to Prague and then turn around after a week in Europe and go right back with Dita to Europe. So, you know, with the jet lag, it's like exhausting. Like it was too long a time to stay in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and it was too short a time to, you know, stay here. It was a mess. So I was thinking I'm going to have to turn right around and go back. But as luck would have it, the lockdown happened before our tour. So everything's canceled.
Okay.
So it got rescheduled for later on in the next year, which was this February.
Right.
We were supposed to go back out on this tour. And then that got canceled. So probably 2022.
Here's to 2022. I'm having a glass of wine and some.
Oh, how nice. I forgot to stock my bar.
I also have a giant jug of water because I have a scratchy throat. I forgive me, my
me
listeners.
Too.
Do you?
Ooh, me too.
So, tell me what you. We were talking a couple of weeks ago. You have all these cool things coming up, like because I was concerned about you, and I have a lot of friends that are performers, that you know haven't been able to work. So it seems like things are sort of opening up a little bit, and you have some
it's
cool things.
Terrifying, quite honestly, for performers, because it's not only for us that we can't perform for a live audience, which is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of us get our pats on the back by this applause, you know,
right.
Doing things online, you know, it's not the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the things that I've done online, but yeah, just it's
including this podcast.
Feel, you know, it's so nice to be in front of people and to be with people, and for us performers to be backstage together, because that's where we're really being family.
You talked about that in the first episode, how it's a sacred space behind this, you know, behind the curtain. And I think that's really beautiful. I understand that a little bit when I was in plays and things. But that sense of spiritual family kind of thing must be really hard to go without, you know, for so long.
Yeah, it's tough. It's been real tough. And then a lot of us, you know, because burlesque straddles the sex work world, not that we're all consider ourselves sex workers, but, you know, from a government point of view, I mean, if you... Sure, I take off my clothes for money, or maybe some of the girls work at Pumps in Brooklyn, you know, which is a really super cool strip club. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it straddles the line. So a lot of us couldn't get the unemployment. I was super lucky and got it. Because if you look on the unemployment application, the PUA, it says, I mean, a lot of us are 1099, so we couldn't get regular unemployment. So the PUA one, it says, if you're a sex worker, you can't get any money.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I mean, it's horrific. It's like, what do you think people are doing sex work for in the first place? You know, most people are doing it because it's good money. It's something to get them through, whether that's college or whether it's on to the next thing, or maybe they just really enjoy it, you know, but it shouldn't be a measure of your worth, you know? So this that's been really, it's been tough for a lot of people. And then Instagram cracking down too on,
I know,
saying the word Patreon or OnlyFans.
Oh, I didn't know, but wait, is this a new thing? I didn't know about
that. Yeah, so they came out with a new term of terms of agreements a couple months ago.
Terms of service or whatever?
Yeah, their terms of service changed. And so in order, when you sign it, you're signing that you won't sell yourself on Instagram. Fuck you, Zuckerberg.
My God, right? Oh, man. That's so funny because I just saw something that Twitter actually, and I think Facebook and Instagram are going to like follow suit maybe or whatever. Twitter is instituting this survey apparently starting today for like a week, surveying folks about what Twitter should do with politicians. Accounts, and what's the level at which the gist of the thing is what is the level at which that person's account should be banned? And then you have that. So I'm thinking like, that's cool. I'm going to hear this bullshit about Instagram. Like half my friends are on OnlyFans and you know, all those things.
Well, I love Instagram. It's, I didn't used to, I used to be a Twitter person. I love to read. And I love the little twists and puns and things that you can do when you don't have a visual. And so, but, you know, I switched over to Instagram because it's really fun to read like a little magazine, you know? And you feel like you're really keeping up with people. You feel like, because you're seeing their faces, you know, you're...
It just annoys, like, I don't know if I'm the only one that finds this annoying. So, like, when I send out the podcast, like, I'll edit this thing and I'll put it out on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter, I can do links, but I can only do 280 characters. And so I have to be, I have to edit the text of the tweet because I have to include like two long ass URLs. It's kind of crazy.
Always link in bio. That's the
That's true. That's true. And I do often do that too.
I just got a link tree. Woo!
No, I keep hearing about this link tree. What is it? What is this link tree of which you speak? What is that?
Look at me, fancy business.
I know. Look at you. What is that?
It's a service that gives you more than one link on your bio. So directs to a different website so that you can put more than one thing. So you can put all your podcasts on.
I'm going to have to look into that. I'm writing down notes right now.
You're learning so much.
I really am. And I love your bedroom, your boudoir. You're in my boudoir as well.
Oh,
you can see that. You can tell who's the stripper, who's the burlesque person in this podcast.
Well, mine is so like lovely. It's so like calming.
It's like, I call it my martini glass. Because it's the color of olives, olive green.
Ooh, that's nice.
And I would turn the light on, but the bedroom was a mess. And so I like to keep it kind of hidden.
I just keep it here. I'll show you. I keep all my fun things here.
I love everything about that room. The pictures.
You know, here you see my prized program from the Club 82.
Oh.
Which used to be on 4th Street.
Uh-huh.
It was a drag review in the 60s. This one's from 1963, and it looks like it was made yesterday. It's so beautiful.
Right, exactly.
And when I get blue, I will flip through that because it just has the best. There's a drag performer in there named Baby Elephant. Baby Elephant. Baby Elephant.
I love it.
She's the cutest and love it. Like, but there's so many little gems in there. And then speaking of Barbara Stanwyck, there she is.
Oh my God, that's her.
Because I got this amazing 8x10 with Lois DeFay.
Oof.
There, with, and it's her picketing on Times Square, because this is when in the 40s they outlawed the word burlesque on a marquee. And so here's, you know, this lady doing burlesque in a movie in Ball of Fire, and then, you know, she has to go to New Jersey to work. And so she, it says Barbara Stanwyck, what she got that I ain't got.
Oh my God.
And there's Lois.
Wow.
After backstage with her costume designer.
Fabulous. All these isn't that great photographs.
Yeah. So yeah, I have a lot of that. This is Ann Corio's. This was burlesque program.
I love that.
That was on 2nd Avenue, right around the corner from my house. And as nice. Was the Club 82.
Right.
And
right.
my Diamond Lil.
Oh, look at her. Just,
it's not signed, but it's an original program.
Oh, it is a playbill. Holy mm-hmm. shit, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh,
and this
God.
One over here, I love it. She's a little bit askew right now, but she's a sketch that somebody did on the back of a reserved card in a
right.
club. In like probably, I'm going to say 1940 from the way she's dressed.
Right. Oh, just, my God.
Somebody brought their pencils. To a burlesque show.
Fantastic.
Doing a little hula dance. It's the
That's
cutest.
So fucking cool.
Yeah. And then I have another little Club 82 over here.
Oh,
that's
nice.
A program. And, you know, an original photo of my downstairs neighbor at the Club 82 before he moved out of my apartment. And down here is my prize possession. My birthday card from Mother Flawless Sabrina, who
Whoa.
Came to my birthday party. And she made this beautiful birthday card of her in like just getting into drag.
Oh my God.
Says, don't want to be late. Gotta hurry. Cause I'm going to wish Dirty Martini a happy birthday. Isn't that sweet?
That's priceless. Holy shit.
July.
I love it. I love the color of the walls.
Yeah,
silver lamé curtain. It's so you. It's fabulous.
This is a velvet painting back here. It's hard to see her, but her name's Pepper.
I was wondering what that was. Fabulous. Oh my gosh.
It's my mermaid tail too.
Oh.
I have a bunch of stuff in here that I've been.
Where do you keep all of your wardrobe? You must have crazy amounts of
storage locker down the street that is really great.
Oh, nice.
That's so this
fabulous.
Doesn't get crushed with my regular clothes and sweat socks. You know what I mean?
Right.
You don't want that. This is.
I was gonna say. Oh, look at that! Fabulous.
This is the hat I wore. It's very Easter bonnety.
Mm-hmm.
I wore it for Dita Von Teese's carousel horse that she lent me in her show, and I got to have her very beautiful carousel horse for about 2 years as we toured the United States.
Oh, nice.
And I got to put my own spin on her number, which was really fun to do.
Didn't I read something about this? Or did we talk about this? About how you had to
really... pictures of it lately because I'm just reminiscing a lot about my performance days, you know?
Yeah, it must have. I think it was probably in Instagram and how you said that getting your bearings on the horse that was moving... And the carousel was what was kind of tricky. Is that how I remember reading something?
Well,
like that.
It was funny because she lives in LA and I live in New York, mm-hmm. and we were only had, I think our first date was in San Diego for that tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like begging to come out and set it up in a studio, but that's really expensive to get the prop shipped. You know, like she has a lot of details in her show, like little mm-hmm. she's got a lot of big props and you know it all sort of goes a certain way, so we ended up the day of the show putting the horse carousel horse up in the audience part of the theater so I could get a feel for it and
oh, nice.
Actually do it for the first time, And I had no idea. I've never used a big prop before. So I was really just winging it.
Yeah.
So I was scared. I mean, I was really terrified.
And you were doing like burlesque moves on the horse. You weren't just sitting on a horse. You were doing.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you know, if you think about it, the horse has a pole, it's carousel. Mm-hmm. And so I was riding some carousels, like trying to be like, oh, I wonder if it's like this. And be like, oh.
Oh,
there's all the children around.
Right, no kidding. It's amazing you didn't kill yourself.
Or, you know, get scolded or whatever. But, you know, there was really no way to prepare for it because a prop is custom made usually for the burlesque performer who makes their numbers. So,
right.
You know, they're 100% in on the design and the elements. So I just wanted, you know, as many access points as I could get so that way I felt like I could prop myself up. Because
mm-hmm.
Dita just looks good, you know, no matter what. Like, she's such a beautiful Vargas pinup that, you know, she could she could sit and eat some popcorn like this all hunched over and look gorgeous. She doesn't, but she could.
I don't know.
And I don't know, my titties would be like down near my thighs. I'd be like, look. I have to have a corset and the right proportions. And,
oh, right.
You know. So, yeah.
Like, what were corsets like? Are they extremely uncomfortable?
You know what, I love this woman, Isabella Prior Attire. She talks a lot about the Victorian age and women's liberation and mm-hmm. corsets, because, you know, women were horseback riding. They were, you know, I saw a wonderful exhibition in Basel, Switzerland, the pregnancy corsets that they had.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Corsets. So there were all these things. I mean, you know, it wasn't ideal, of course, but
pregnancy corset.
I have them here.
Those are two horrifying words to be put together.
Oh, here it is. I'm sitting on it, of course.
Oh.
But like this corset here that I use for the carousel horse.
Oh, gorgeous.
It's very glamorous and exciting, but it's also very structural, so mm-hmm. it doesn't really have to be tight. It just has to be tight in the right places.
I see.
So this is not uncomfortable at all. Some of my gowns are more uncomfortable than this corset. But if I lost this corset, I'd be screwed, because the front piece attaches to it here.
Uh-huh.
With the snap.
Uh-huh.
And there's a hole, as my designer David Quinn says, a fancy tablecloth on the front. And on the back is a poofy skirt. And then that attaches with two whopper poppers there. Yes.
So tell me the name of the designer again. And he does all your clothes?
Yeah, David Quinn. He's amazing theatrical costume designer.
Mm.
And we've been working together since like the beginning of my career. Because he came to one of my shows and was like, that dress is terrible.
Oh, no, wait, really? That's so
like,
cool.
Yeah, we'll make you one.
That's amazing. So what's that process like, the collaboration of coming up with new costumes and things? Like, do you go to him and say, I have sort of idea, or does he come to you, or is it both sort of fluid like that?
It really depends. Most of the time I'm going to him and being like, is this possible? And then he'll be like, no. It'd be so expensive. And then like 2 weeks later, you know, I'll describe the concept, what I felt like I wanted to do. And then 2 weeks later, he'll call me back up and be like, you know, if we do this and we do that and we do this other thing, we could make it cheaper. The one that I was really into was before... Oh God, who wore that? Was it Nicki Minaj? No. Somebody wore the new Mugler Kardashian.
Oh, one. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I can't remember those stars' names.
I can't
but, use it. Yeah, somebody was doing the Mugler. It's like a giant clamshell.
Oh.
And the skirt goes like up around like this. And then it can drape down. It's just the most beautiful thing. It's black on one side and pink on the other side. And then you're supposed to be a beautiful pearl on the inside in a pearl corset.
Fucking, that sounds amazing. I have to look that up. I have no idea.
Yeah, look it up. It was in the Kitsch exhibit in the Met.
Okay.
Terry Mugler from like the 90s, I think. It's like an old season. But the year that I was like that, I was like, I was looking up different designs and things I could pop up or things that turned into other things.
Yeah.
And I was like, let's do something like that. And Debs, of course, was like, you can't do that. It's too expensive. Mugler did that, but it was expensive. Well, and then 2 weeks later was like, right. Yeah, maybe we could do it this way. And then bitch wore it on the red carpet and everybody saw it. And now and she called me up and was like, we can't do it now, can we?
Oh, you're kidding. Oh my gosh.
Debs is like, no, you can't do that now because it's too relevant. You know what I mean? Everybody knows about it. So what's the point?
That's wow. So, I mean, I would imagine that the difference between like a haute couture costume designer or designer pretty much can do whatever they want because it's all commissions or runway, right? But a theatrical costume designer, it's all about how can we do something as closely as possible but spend a lot less money. You know, I think that's a whole other kind of form of artistic genius, really, is to, because it's all about that in the theater, you know, like we don't have the budget of, you know, a Kardashian, you know, to spend like $50,000 on a dress, or I don't even think they buy anything they wear. I think they get it all for free, you know.
I mean, back in the old days of burlesque, they probably did spend a fortune on their wardrobe and took very, very good care of it, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, as opposed to their, but they were making a lot of money then too. It's the economy is different now. We're on what we call a burlesque budget, which is a new concept. Right. Means we broke.
I'm just glad you're starting to work again. So, tell me what's going on, like work-wise and personal-wise, and I really wanted to do like a quick catch up with you because I've been, you know, concerned about my friends in general during this whole COVID thing. And also especially my friends that are performers, because I know it's been really rough.
Yeah. Well, so, first of all, I've been really enjoying your bread baking. I've been really, and your new kitty cat, Margot Channing.
Margot Channing. She's
so cute.
So we got her, she was, and I didn't find this out until we got her. So a friend of ours, a really good friend of ours, who actually works on the podcast as well, she's our social media director. She does this animal rescue side hustle. And I was not in the market for another cat because we have Tito. And in fact, I'm going to open the door. So
Tito's wonderful. I love
him. He's so fat now, just like me.
That's a character.
I know. Hold on. I like to leave the door open so that they can come and you'll see them like flop on the bed and stuff. They're so cute. So yeah. So Margot was like, you know, a rescue. And I just lost the image. Can you see me? Okay. And Christian really, my boyfriend Christian really, really wanted another cat. So I was like, oh, all right. And we saw pictures of her. She's so pretty. And then like a week, she was here. She was, you know, we initially started out as like a foster, because we wanted to make sure that Tito wasn't going to destroy her, you know, or the other way around. And it turns out from day one, from the moment she came into the apartment here, she was the alpha cat.
Oh!
She's like, you're not going to fuck with me. And she's like this big. She was like tiny, tiny little, like 6-month-old cat, you know? But she was the one that was in charge. She was also, when I found this out, when she was delivered here, was considered feral.
Oh.
Now, I don't know about you. I'm sure you've been to Rome. You know, Rome is full.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds, thousands of scary fucking feral cats, you mm-hmm. know. So that's what I had in my mind about feral, and really in the parlance of I think, rescue, it's really just about not socialized. Mm-hmm. You know, so she was pretty skittish and for the first couple months. And then she, you know, slowly warmed up, and she is now the most lovey-dovey, adorable kitty. She's not a kitty. I guess she's still technically a kitty, but she's bigger and she's super happy, and hopefully you get to see her at some point. But yeah. But we were talking about you.
Yes. What I meant to say was cooking and bread baking and all that stuff. Oh boy, I have been cooking up a storm.
Oh, good.
And I have to say that part of my personality is expressed well. Like, I feel like I really like it. You know, there's been a lot of bad stuff about COVID. Mm-hmm. Terrified to bring it home, you know, to get it. I mean, right, I'm more scared to give it to someone else than I am
to have it myself. Absolutely, me too.
I mean, my partner, my roommate, you know, it's just, for me, it's terrifying to think that I could do that to someone and wreck somebody's health.
So
that's been terrifying. But the part I really like is being like a homebody.
Me too.
Having a lot of time off, resting my legs, which were really busted right around the last year this time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, uh-oh, like I couldn't walk for a few days after a performance, like that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was working way too hard and mm-hmm. I was traveling too much, and it just takes a toll on your body.
Right.
And it was, so I have to say, I really, aside from the terror of it all and all this, oh my God, all the death. I mean, it was just so intense, like emotionally, psychologically, psychically, it was intense.
Right.
But after all that, and after the streets began to liven up a little bit, because that was also a little terrifying.
Wasn't that surreal?
The emptiness of New York.
Emptiness,
I've never seen New York empty like that.
Yeah.
And New York has always been a place where you know that you can go to find work. And so that was really, really wild to watch.
Right.
All of my income streams just stop all at once. So I must say, I was really happy that the government doubled down, did the right thing, gave us some money to live.
Right.
Because, I mean, not everybody, of course, but I was super lucky because I had a savings before COVID, and then went through all of that, and then had my PUA, went through all of that.
Oh, girl.
So
you have jobs coming
back and starting to work slowly.
Good.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to hear that. I mean, I know what you
mean. There's no shows yet.
Right.
But Slipper Room is talking about reopening.
Love the Slipper Room.
Yeah. And I think some of the smaller venues are going to start to crank out some shows. Duane Park has been wonderful. I don't personally perform there, but some of my friends do. And they've been incredible there for support for those people because, you know, not everybody can work outside on the street.
Well, I heard something about April 1st. Broadway is doing this whole outdoor indoor thing to sort of test the waters about Broadway coming back. Cause I have a lot of friends that work on Broadway or associated with that industry. And so that sounds really exciting. April 1st is this one night thing, but I think it's gonna, you know, sort of test the waters and expand from there. So hopefully, you know, I do feel a lot more at ease about, you know, all my friends now are getting vaccinated. I got vaccinated, you know, one more shot to go. And just, you know, I wanna hug you. Like, you're Italian, I'm Italian. That's been like the hardest thing for me is like, and I do, you know, I don't want to fucking hug you like this. You know what I mean? Like,
that's how I hug people anyway. I get in there.
I know. I like Burrow, you know, like, you know, and the crook of their neck and stuff. I want to, you know, get back to that. And kissing people. I kiss people all the time.
Yeah, remember kissing people.
Oh, I know.
How nice.
It's just crazy.
But
I watched
today, you know, I was backstage with the two puppeteers and we were working super closely, you know, on a tiny puppet set. And so that was super fun. Nice. And I leaned over to them at one point and I was like, God, it's just so good to hang out with you girls and create again.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Fabulous. Cheers. Cheers to that. And cheers to you. I
How
love you.
That?
Oh, I love that. Oh my
That's
God.
Amanda Lepore's lipstick.
You know, I've seen her Instagram and she, when she shows the lipstick, but I didn't know that it had the Coney
this
Island
one?
Guy.
I tried to do God. Her, but nobody can replicate her. She's the most fabulous, wonderful person in the world.
Oh my God.
The thing I like is that it's a two-pronged situation. You got your first, you know.
Is it like a liner and then lipstick, or
it's like a lipstick that's Amanda there has her name on it. You can even get them rhinestoned, apparently. She'll send them to you for a price in a rhinestone case. And then it's a little lip gloss.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's so Amanda. Fabulous.
It's so Amanda.
I really miss seeing her backstage at the McKittrick, her and Joey Arias.
I'm supposed to have Joey Arias on our show. I gotta get that going. You know, everything just sort of like closed down and stuff, but we're going to get back there. And gosh, it's good to see you. And next time, I hope it's in person.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Thank you. Thank you, Dirty Martini. I will see you soon, I promise.
Yes, for sure.
Thank you.
Way Off the Record has been written, edited, and produced by Scott Ambrosino, also produced by Christian Hernandez. And we are available on all platforms where you get your podcasts. And drop us a line on social media. We can be reached at Way Off the Record has been written, edited, and produced by Scott Ambrosino, also produced by Christian Hernandez. And we are available on all platforms where you get your podcasts. And drop us a line on social media. We can be reached at